I wish I were as good a dancer as McKenna is. I think she's got the spirit of worship. I really appreciate that. I'd like to share with you some words from the Gospel according to Matthew, from the 17th chapter. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to him Moses and Elijah talking with him. And then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I'll make some dwellings here, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." And while he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them and said, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. And as they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." There was a word in there that's kind of a big word called transfiguration. Often today is referred to as Transfiguration Sunday, the last day before the beginning of Lent. Do you know what that word transfiguration means? Trans means to change or to move from one place to another. Figure, it's an appearance, right? Kind of like a figure. And so transfiguration would be a change in appearance. That's all it means. It just means Jesus looked like a normal person one moment, and the next moment he was dazzling, spectacular white. In the Gospel according to Matthew, Jesus, there's a geographical movement as there's a spiritual movement through Jesus' life. It begins in the Galilee area, and you know that it's going to end in the Jerusalem area. And in Galilee, things are good. Jesus is teaching and healing, and crowds are gathering to listen to him. And then in Jerusalem, you know that things are going to get rough. He's going to be criticized, and then he's going to be put on trial, and he's going to be crucified. The transfiguration comes right about in the middle, as Jesus is beginning to move away from Galilee and start to set his sights towards Jerusalem. He apparently needs to gather some thoughts as he gets ready to head towards Jerusalem, and so he goes to a place away to have some quiet moments of peace. Have you ever felt like that? Like you need some quiet time away? Is there a place you like to go when you want to get away from it all for a little while? You know where Jesus' place was? Where? Do you know where it is? You weren't listening as I was reading the story a minute ago, were you? Where'd he go? Not down in the valley. He went up into a mountain. He went up on a mountaintop and he was transfigured. They were spending some time in prayer and suddenly his appearance changed and he became dazzling white. And he was seen with two of the great leaders anybody has ever known. There was Moses, who represented the law, the first five books of the Old Testament, and then Elijah, who represented the prophets. Most of the rest of the Old Testament is about the prophets. Up until this point, Jesus had been pretty much a normal person, or at least as far as the disciples were concerned. Now they're given a glimpse into a different kind of Jesus, one that has a special place in God's heart, one that has a special relationship with God, who can speak to people like Moses and Elijah in a way that most of us don't get a chance to. If you'd been there and had that opportunity to talk to Moses and Elijah, what kinds of things would you have liked to have asked them? Wouldn't that be a fascinating time to be able to talk with them and find out some of the questions I'd like to find difficult answers to? You know what the disciples' response was, though, when they found Jesus' appearance suddenly changed? Were they overjoyed? Were they excited? They were so surprised that we're told that they were afraid. So afraid that they fell to the ground. Do you remember the last time that you were afraid? Overwhelmed by fear? On Tuesday night, I had one of those dreams that wakes you up. Have you ever been woken up by a dream? This was my dream. It was Sunday morning. The weather was beautiful. People just kept streaming in. I had a message that I had worked really hard on and was feeling really good about and was really excited to share the message. And then I got up in front of y'all and my notes weren't there. Couldn't find my notes anywhere. And I thought in my head, I know where it is. I know where my iPad is. It's back on the couch in the living room. And I had this horrible moment where I wondered, all right, do I ask y'all to wait and do I go back and get it or do I go try to pull them off the computer or do I just try to wing it and see how much I actually remember? That's when I woke up. I tried to go back to sleep to see how the dream ends, but apparently it doesn't work that way. Do you remember the last time you were afraid? There's always something to be afraid of, isn't there? If the ice storm hits, will I be able to get home? Did I turn the oven off when I left? Did I lock the door when I left the house? What if this pain doesn't go away? What's the stock market going to do this week? What if the fighting in Kiev keeps spreading? I have been told that most people who drowned don't actually die from too much water in their lungs. Apparently, there's not enough water in most drowning victims' lungs to actually asphyxiate them. I've been told that what they actually die of is the fear of not being able to breathe. I've been also told that people who fall from great heights, like if you're skydiving and your chute doesn't open, you don't actually die from the injuries that you get when you hit the ground.
Dude, first Sunday, the kids stay in worship.
And we're talking about falling from a skydiving accident.
A little gruesome, buddy. Let's pump the brakes.
So since I got you listening, do you know what people die of?
Pump the brakes.
When they fall from an airplane?
The parents fear. Who are angry at you for using this as an illustration. Yes, I'm with you. From the fear of falling. Sorry. Go ahead.
All right, here's a story that's appropriate for kids. Sometimes fear is a good thing. For example, did you hear about the guy that bought a parrot? He bought this talking parrot because he always wanted a talking parrot. The problem is that all the parrot did was swear. Foul-mouthed parrot. Sorry for the pun. Dan got it. Foul-mouthed parrot. Foul, another word for bird. So this guy did everything he knew how to do to try to keep this parrot from swearing, and nothing worked. One day, out of frustration, have you heard this joke before? One day, out of frustration, the guy takes the parrot and throws him in the refrigerator. After a while in the refrigerator, he got really feeling guilty about this parrot that was left in the refrigerator, and so he goes and lets the parrot out. And to his surprise, the parrot is the best behaved, most polite bird that he has ever heard. Very well spoken, said please and thank you and everything else. And so he asked the parrot, all right, I got to know, what happened in that refrigerator? The parrot said, well, I wasn't going to say anything, but since you've asked, I got to know, what did the chicken do?
For the record, faith community does not endorse using a refrigerator to discipline your pets.
I thought that was a good story. All right, what I'd like to talk about is the fear that keeps us from being in God's presence. The fear that keeps us from being thoughtful or creative or hopeful people. The Gospel of Matthew started out with a story about a guy named Zechariah and the birth of the first baby in the Gospel of Matthew, a guy by the name of John the Baptist. Zechariah was a priest who got up to go in the Holy of Holies. Happened once a year. He got to go up there. He went up in the Holy of Holies, and back up behind that screen, there was an angel, the angel Gabriel. Do you remember what his reaction was when he saw the angel? He was afraid. So what were the angel's first words to him? Fear not. Don't be afraid. The angel Gabriel then went to another young lady by the name of Mary and told her that she was going to give birth to Jesus. Do you remember what Mary's reaction when the angel showed up to her was? She was afraid. So what were the angel's first words to Mary? Fear not. If you read on a little bit further, when the angel or the disciples are out in a boat and suddenly there's a storm that pops up, their reaction to the storm is they're afraid. And then they see this guy walking out on the water towards them and they're even more afraid. And then they realize that it's Jesus. Do you remember what Jesus' first words to the disciples out in that boat were? Fear not. After Jesus is crucified, there are two women named Mary that go to the tomb. They get there very early in the morning. The stone is still rolled in front of the tomb. They're wondering how they're going to get the stone rolled away, and suddenly there's this earthquake and this angel appears. The angel is shining white, rolls the stone away from them. The guards there fell down like they were dead, it says. Do you know what the angel's first words to the two Marys that morning were? Fear not. Fear not. So how do you do that? How do you actually not fear? Well, I think Jesus tells the disciples to do some things that I think are pretty good advice in overcoming fear. For example, one thing that he says to them is, get up. They're down on the ground. He says to them, get up. His instructions are simple and clear. He got them to their feet. One of the things my wife likes to say from time to time is sometimes you just got to fake it till you make it. Sometimes you pretend like you have things under control, and the idea is that maybe by acting a certain way, you'll start thinking a different way. Sometimes you just got to make yourself seem like you're more courageous and able than you are. There's a story about a guy from Dayton that's been making national news this week about a guy that I think did a good job of that. Have you heard this story? The guy who is an RTA bus driver down in Dayton. Actually, he's from Troutwood. His name is Ricky Wagoner. At 5 o'clock on Monday morning, his bus stopped. And so he got out of his bus to try to figure out what was going on. And some kids who were apparently wandering the neighborhood looking for trouble decided that he was the trouble that they were looking for. They had a gun, and they shot at him. They shot him in the leg, and then they shot him twice in the chest. His 911 call at 5:20 on Monday morning was, I've been hit in the leg. My chest feels like I've been hit with a sledgehammer. But the bullets to the chest didn't injure him. Do you know why? There was something in his vest pocket that caught the bullets, and the bullets lodged in it. He had a Bible in his vest pocket. Do you know this story? It went national. The two bullets went, it was actually a translation of the Bible called The Message. Then the guys came at him. One guy had a knife and was trying to stab him. So do you know what he did next? I know this really isn't a good Sunday, is it? I'm just getting myself in worse and worse trouble. Dude. Do you know what he did?
Sorry, Jamie.
I gotta finish the story now that I've started. He took a pen out of his pocket and started attacking the phone.
Kids!
Okay, I'm done with that one. He wrestled the guy to the ground, took the pen out of his pocket, and they all ran. The Apostle Paul's advice to a young person, here's a young person quote, named Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:7 is, I did not give you a spirit of cowardice, but rather a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. The Transfiguration, Jesus says, fear not. One of the things he tells the disciples to do is get up. The next thing he tells them to do is come down. Go down into the valley. Peter's reaction was to say, this is really cool. Let's enjoy this for a while. Let's make some booze. Let's stay here for a moment. And that's often our reaction, isn't it? When something goes really well, you want to stay there and enjoy it for a while. Jesus says, no, we got to take this experience and we've got to put it to work in the way that we live every day. I think it's a good idea for all of us every now and then to put us in a position where we're a little bit uncomfortable with where we are, to not just enjoy the good moments, but also to put us in a position where we're a little bit uncomfortable. There was a guy about 10 years or so ago by the name of William Wimsatt, who decided that that was a good idea, and he engaged in a crusade he called the Bet with America. He believed that America was getting to be a place that there was too much fear, and it was costing us all the things that are good about America. He said it was threatening our democracy and our diversity and our freedom, and so he decided to launch himself on he called it a Bet for America. He said we shouldn't be afraid of everybody. He thought things were a lot less bad than they really are, and so he decided to go to all the dangerous places in the country that he could find. And this was his bet. His bet was, if I lose, I die. If I win, though, and can go to these dangerous places and don't get hurt, then you've got to at least listen to what I have to say. So he would go and he would visit places like Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and Philadelphia and New York and Boston. He said, I accept a ride from anybody that offers me a ride. I never ask to get out unless I have to use the restroom. And as soon as I get to a town, I go to the worst parts of town. I look for the public housing projects. I walk through the courts. I walk across abandoned lots and head down whatever streets or alleys look the scariest to me. He says, conventional wisdom is, I should have been at least robbed a bunch of times and probably dead by now. But he says, you know the only crime that was committed against him? There was a woman or a girl in Monroeville, which is a very wealthy suburb of Pittsburgh, that stole his diary and a pair of jeans because she wanted them as a souvenir of this guy that was engaged in this bet with America. William Sloan Cawthon, who was a preacher at Riverside United Methodist Church in New York City, once said, fear distorts truth, not by exaggerating the ills of the world, but by underestimating our ability to deal with them. While love seeks truth, fear seeks safety. You didn't think I could work a William Sloan Cawthon quote in, did you? Get up, come down. Jesus' next advice is, keep quiet, he says. Keep quiet. That's a strange thing for Jesus to say, isn't it? Don't you think he'd want to say, share the good news, I'm the way and the truth and the life, let everybody know? It's a phenomenon called the messianic secret that you find a number of times through the gospel, enough times that it's not just a coincidence or a freak accident. For some reason, Jesus tells the disciples that at least early on here, don't tell anybody. As if to say sometimes our best experience or our best reaction to the holy is to let it sink in. The psalmist said it this way, be still and know that I am God. But there does come a point where you have to tell somebody. We know the story, and how do we know the story? At some point they had to tell it. Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, or one of the disciples had to say what was going on. And so at some point I think we've got to get to the point where we tell the good news, where we tell the story about what Christ is doing in our lives. I think that's a good challenge. Tell the story about the good things that are going on. I've been trying to keep track of some of the good things that are going on around Faith Community this week. And one of them is last weekend, the youth engaged or were a part of a thing called the... Who is here? Who is a part of the 30-hour famine? You know that going into that, Susan was all worried because we've had a series of weeks that were really bad weather and people weren't signing up, and so she was all worried about whether people were going to show up. Is this fair, Susan? And how many kids did we have show up to that?
We had 30 kids
that showed up wanting to go hungry for 30 hours to be a part of the experience of understanding what it means to be hungry in the world. And we didn't have a lot of time to do the fundraising that's normally done for that because of the weather, and ended up raising over $1,000, right?
Correct. $1,050 right now.
Which will feed 17 kids per year?
It's $420 a year, so we're a little over
2 to 3
kids for a whole year.
So we're feeding a number of kids for an entire year. That's good news, isn't it? Those are the kind of stories that we ought to be sharing with each other, I think, more than we do. Another thing that happened last weekend is, as I've said earlier, we've had a number of Sundays where it seems like if there's bad weather that's going to happen in a week, it tends to happen on Sunday morning or Saturday night, and so our attendance this year has been really bad. Last week we had a break in that weather, and do you know that we had 30 more people here in church last week than we had on the last week of February a year ago? That's, to me, a sign of hope. Yeah, woohoo, good thing. The sermon last Sunday was on loving your enemy. And after the sermon, we showed a little video of one guy was on one side of the gorge and the other guy was on another side of the gorge. And one guy was obviously an enemy of the other guy, throwing rocks at him. And the one guy was taking the rocks that was being thrown at him and built a bridge across the gorge. And at the end of the sermon or service, what did we do at the end of the service? Do you remember what we had? We had some rocks. Do you know, I've had 4 or 5 people this week that have reached in their pocket at some point in a conversation, pulled out their rock, and Steve still got it with him. And how do you describe that rock?
The stone rock cast.
It's the stone not cast. Remember the story about the woman that was caught doing something bad and the people were going to stone her? So Jesus said, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. That's the stone not thrown. How cool is that? How cool is that? There's a guy named John Henry Falk who is a preacher down in East Texas who talks about as a child in East Texas, he used to like to play with his cousins. They'd play Texas Rangers. They'd get out their stick horses and they'd dance around the kitchen and pretend that there was no problem in the world that they couldn't solve, no bad guy that they couldn't take on. One day, there was some commotion in the chicken coop in the back, and their mom told them to go out and check out the chicken coop. They went out there and started ruffling around in the hay and came face to face with a black snake. Scared them to death. And so they made a new door in the chicken coop. Ended up a bit bumped and bruised as they left. When they got back to mom, mom said to him, that's kind of silly. Don't you know a black snake can't hurt anybody? And Robert Falk's answer was, he said, I know that a black snake can't hurt anybody, but it sure can cause you to hurt yourself. Isn't fear like that? Fear really can't do us any damage, but it sure can make us hurt ourselves. Here are Jesus' words today to us. Fear not. Get up. Go down. Keep quiet. And then share the story. May it be so. Amen.